This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Oh! Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
Well, you guys knew it was coming. It's time for the current state of WWE, and yes, a very anticipated edition of the show as Anthony DeMarco joins me after what was a really crazy, incredible, somewhat disappointing, various opinions that will you'll hear throughout the show. But we have Anthony to talk about WrestleMania 40 and of, you know, tonight, who the hell knows what's going to happen with the Monday Night Raw after Mania. But the first Triple H era, or the Paul Levesque era that WWE has dawned on us, has come and gone, and we're looking forward to WrestleMania 41 already. But Anthony, it's gone. It's done. It's over. We have our answers. We have our decisions. What did you make of the event overall?
Overall, I thought it was a very good WrestleMania. It was a WrestleMania that I do think is going to stand the test of time. It's one that, you know, in the immediate aftermath, feels like one of the bigger ones of the last number of years, probably the last decade for sure, right up there, if not beyond WrestleMania 31, as I mentioned on our preview and prediction show. And more than that, it really did feel like the ushering in of a new era. And you didn't have to be a rocket scientist to take that away from the event, because WWE kind of shoved it down our throats that they themselves wanted you to know that it was the ushering in of a new era.
That's the message that we got loud and clear. And the only way you can usher in a new era is by having several major title changes. And we saw that in the Women's Championship, the WWE Women's Championship. Of course, we saw that in the Intercontinental Championship, the both tag team championships that have now been split, and the world title that changed hands twice last night. And the massive talking point here, which is obviously the WWE Universal Heavyweight Championship, that has now left the shoulder of Roman Reigns after 1,316 days. And I mean, we can start with that and then at some point maybe delve into another topic of the world title with Drew. But I got to ask you, how do you feel about the Cody Rhodes victory that we kind of all saw coming, but the execution of it with the legends that we anticipated getting involved minus Austin? What did you think?
Well, I mean, the end result is exactly what it needed to be. You needed to have Cody Rhodes walk out of WrestleMania as the Undisputed Champion. I mean, as much as I don't like Cody Rhodes, I mean, I've long accepted that I'm in the minority of his babyface character, and clearly people have embraced him as the face of the company. And the guy going forward, as the torch was officially passed last night from Roman Reigns to him. How it played out, like, I mean, save for The Undertaker inexplicably showing up instead of what everyone assumed was going to be Stone Cold Steve Austin, it was exactly what it needed to be. I think it's exactly what everyone wanted it to be. Yes, an overbooked as hell match, but I think given the circumstances, it was one of those instances where it was needed to be overbooked like this. But, I mean, beyond that, I mean, objectively speaking, I think it checked all the boxes. Subjectively, I have some feelings on it, but I mean, I'll park those for a moment and just kind of toss it to you from an objective and just unbiased standpoint.
Well, that's the difference here, right? I mean, we can, as we've said so many times, we can separate our personal feelings for his character for and between the decision that's right for the company. And the decision that's right for the company is absolutely for Cody Rhodes to win. And the crowd ate it up. I mean, I heard a little bit of booing during the match, but not enough to really even be noteworthy. And Cody Rhodes winning was significant for the company, for him, for Roman Reigns, that I don't think gets enough credit. And obviously there's a Triple H out there during the press conference saying that Roman Reigns is going to be now moving into another story that is going to quote unquote blow our minds. We'll see what that is. I mean, we all believe it's eventually to The Rock at next year's WrestleMania, which makes sense. But I think that this was the right move, absolutely, despite what we feel about his character and all the crying that we're going to see and have seen already, that, you know, is, it's really difficult to stomach. I understand the emotion. I know why people enjoy it. I understand why they're crying. I don't agree with it. I think it's weak. I mean, I hate to say that, but I understand wrestling can be emotional at times, but this, you know, no one died, you know, like, it's just Cody Rhodes getting to the championship, and I get it. And it's so funny. He talks about so many times he wants to separate himself from his dad and play, you know, forge his own career. And yet he can't stop talking about his dad. Pretty weird way of getting away from your dad's legacy, I guess. But to that aside, which is really difficult to separate, it was a very good match, overbooked, but we expected it overbooked. And if it's expected to be overbooked, it doesn't feel as bad, and it doesn't feel as kind of overdone as it normally would if you didn't expect it to be overbooked. So again, very good match. Effort is all over. The effort on both men's parts were incredible. I also could do without just so many god dang finishers throughout the match being kicked out of and multiplied. And, you know, this is a WrestleMania wide. It was a problem, like constant finishers, like 3, 4, 5 finishers it takes to beat somebody. So that's just kind of a critique overall on the event. But hey, Cody Rhodes winning makes sense.
Yep, exactly. Like, I mean, this is exactly the result that you needed. I mean, my personal feelings, I'm not going to lie, when the gong went off, it completely took the wind out of my sails. Me and my buddy were literally on our feet eating it all up, waiting for the glass to shatter. And when the gong went off, we both immediately checked out. Like, we just started swearing, this is BS, you know, F this. And I mean, that's just because I'm not an Undertaker fan. And literally 10 minutes earlier, we were just discussing about how he's involved in everything, and he has to be involved in every type of production, including the Bray Wyatt documentary. And then, you know, my buddy said, it's like they booked this match to piss you off, like to piss me off, but again, that's just me, right? Like, I think the vast majority of people were disappointed that Austin wasn't there, but were very happy with the Undertaker as like kind of like a consolation prize. I was not. For me, it took me out of the moment, and the rest of it was dead to me, for lack of better words. And then, you know, everything beyond him winning the match, I mean, with everyone and their mother coming out, literally everyone and their mother, kids that I had never seen before. And again, guys, I'm just talking about me personally. It disgusted me. It made me nauseous. I hated everything about it. And I think that it all stemmed from it being The Undertaker and not Steve Austin. I think that's where it all stemmed from, because I could have lived with it being all that gooey garbage if Austin had come out. But I think that the mix of the two and the build of the two just completely took me out of the moment. Now, I've since calmed down. I watched the press conference this morning. I've kind of retaken it in, and it isn't as bad. From a storytelling perspective, The Undertaker does make sense because of his history with Paul Heyman, because of his history with Roman Reigns. It does make sense of all the faces coming from Roman Reigns' past. The whole chair shot to the back of Seth Rollins dressed in the Shield gear, which in the moment I was saying, like, what the F does this have to do with anything? Why is he in his Shield attire? But the whole, like, this is a moment that's 10 years in the making. He always chose Seth over, like, Seth always lived in his mind rent-free, kind of pulling on from their match from 2.5 years ago at the Rumble 2022. So since then, and the dust has settled, I've come around on it more. But in the moment, the Undertaker's gong just completely sent me off the deep end.
You know, I can't remember the last time. Maybe I like The Undertaker. You know, I think that obviously he overstayed his welcome towards the end of his career that we all acknowledge and know, and even Taker himself knows. But this is maybe the first time in The Undertaker's career, his 30-year career, that I heard the gong go off and I actually was angry. It felt very much like he was a substitute for Stone Cold that would have been a much better, more perfect fit.
Like a wet fart.
Yeah, it's just like, I just can't remember the last time I was disappointed by a like somebody like The Undertaker coming out to help a major babyface. It just, that reaction to me, I was fighting it, but I was just like, no, it's got to be Austin. Where the hell is he? And, you know, The Rock and Austin, they alluded to it, they teased it, even Easter egged it for weeks. You had it build up perfectly. And it actually, the end of the match was laid out almost exactly as we have said and others. Okay, you got Jimmy coming out to neutral, or Jay coming out to neutralize Jimmy. We're like, okay, perfect. Step one. Step two, Solo comes out, and then you have John Cena neutralize him, and then FU Roman and FU or attitude adjustment Solo through a table. Great. Neutralized. The Rock, Rock Bottom is John Cena. You're like, all right, here we go. And then you get a weird Seth moment. But like you said, it made sense with Seth Rollins because of the 10 years in the making and the throwback to the inevitable or the legendary turn of Seth on Roman back when they were in the Shield. And I understood that, but many people point to that as the moment that Roman lost the match, because if he hit Cody instead of Seth, maybe the match turns out different, you know. But he also, Seth did say to Cody, I'll be your Shield. And I guess he literally meant that literally. So, okay, fine. The story, I have no issue with that whatsoever. I appreciate the attention to detail. Fine. I have no issue with it. And then I'm like, all right, here comes The Rock. He's about to lash Cody. Glass. Let me get the glass. And then I hear gong and the crowd went crazy, which I get why. And I'm just like, no, like, what the hell does The Undertaker have anything to do with The Rock? They've never really had any beef. Yeah, sure. There's WrestleMania 33 with Roman and Undertaker that, you know, was 7 years ago. I mean, I guess there's something there. Like you said, history with Paul Heyman and Taker, but it's a stretch. It's really, you got to like really think about why Undertaker has anything to do with this. And the other issue I had, not only did it substitute Austin, which we, I don't know what happened there. There had to have been some falling out, some reason, because Austin is a perfect fit. Was the other issue with Taker is it looked like he rolled out of bed on a Saturday morning, threw on a sweatshirt. Like he couldn't even go full Taker. He had to be like Mark Calloway. And it's like, if you're going to go full Taker, you got to do it at WrestleMania 40, at least go all the way. It was just this half ass off the street, Mark Calloway in his sweatshirt. And I'm like, come on. I don't know. So no, Austin really kind of set the tone for the rest of the match for me.
Everyone wanted Austin. Everyone was expecting it to be Austin. And it wasn't Austin. And in my head, I'm saying, like, WWE had to know that people were expecting that. Now, look, the vast majority of people from most things I've read online were disappointed it wasn't Austin, but were okay with it being Mark Calloway. Look, not many people hate The Undertaker like I do. Or I guess hate's a strong word. Hate post-2014 because of, I think, he overstayed his welcome. And I do think he loves himself a bit too much. That's just me. Like, I remember he did an interview with a sports talk show in Canada, and he was just like, you know, all the rumors are true about, like, me being the locker room leader and all that. It's just like, dude, get a hold of yourself. No one cares, you know? it's wrestling. You're not leading a football team out for the Super Bowl. But taking my personal bias aside, which is kind of funny in retrospect, but I was legitimately angry in the moment. I said, look, if for X, Y, or Z, Steve Austin couldn't be there, I was saying he must have been like, for me to accept this, he must have been like on the toilet, like with the runs of all time, you know, or like he got so wasted the night before they couldn't get out of bed, like something to that effect. But taking all those personal feelings out of it, it was what it needed to be. It's exactly what everyone wanted to be. Yes, you got Taker and Steve Austin, fine. I think the ending was completely overblown, like Bruce Pritchard coming out, Triple H coming out, and like every babyface coming out. The one argument I saw was that every babyface coming out and like embracing Cody kind of, you know, enforced just how important Roman was and enforced how badass Roman was. Like he was just defeated like Thanos. So I kind of got it from that point of view. But the whole, like, his mom there and the kids who have no idea who they were, and it was just going on and on. And my girlfriend said a good thing, or a valid point, rather, and she's not even a big wrestling fan. She said, like, when has this ever been done for any other wrestler? Like, maybe Chris Benoit was the only time that I could remember being even remotely similar. But I don't even think it was that exact, like that exaggerated. Like The Rock didn't come, I mean, not The Rock, Vince McMahon didn't come strutting down to the ring and start embracing Chris Benoit after he won the belt at WrestleMania. They didn't do that for Daniel Bryan. So, I mean, It was a bit over the top. The Undertaker thing completely killed it to me. It was like someone took a big dump all over my night. But after I came down from my rage, I've accepted it for what it was. And I do think that objectively speaking, it's exactly what it needed to be.
Yeah, that's the thing is with Austin. I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, okay, if he's super sick, or somebody died in his family that is close to him, you know, like I get it. But there had to have been something serious where either maybe even Austin didn't like the creative. He's picky with the creative, but how could he turn down a main event ending of the main event of WrestleMania 40 being in stunning The Rock of all people with them having history in Philly at WrestleMania 15. They alluded to it throughout the night. It would have made perfect sense. You don't need to be getting into a program with The Rock. It's just a stunner that would have really would have echoed throughout the annals of time. And yet they went with a choke slam there. I mean, they had to have reached out to him. I just don't know what broke down. Now, maybe it was by design. Maybe they said, you know, we could have him appear here, but there's something long term they might want to do with Austin. He still is open to wrestling if the right person appears. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he'll show up tonight on Raw. It's not impossible. It's unlikely. But that really pissed me off. But you're right. I mean, the ending of the match was what it should have been. I didn't like all the gooey stuff, as you guys would imagine, you know. That all the family and the friends and holding each other up on their shoulders. The only time I can remember somebody being held up on other people's shoulders was when Randy Orton won against, I forget who it was, and then the Undertaker returned.
Survivor Series.
Yeah, and Undertaker returned, and then, you know, obviously they went into a program that led into WrestleMania with their match. But, like, I just, that's the only time I can think of. It was just kind of stomach churning with all the love and you know, Samantha Irvin's, her voice is cracking because she can't even announce. She's so just emotional. Drained from it, and Cole is crying, and everyone's making out with each other, and it's like I what does this do for me? I mean, I know as a Cody fan, everyone's so emotional about it and loves it, and it's such a feel good moment, and we're gonna get a ton more of this crap opening Raw, I'm sure of it, with his mom, and it's, you know, maybe he'll bring in his wife again, and he'll put the belt around the statue of his father, and talk about what it means to Dusty, and we're gonna get a whole lot more of this. So if you think that was the end of it, I mean, we're just getting started with this kind of stuff with our crying, very soft, chewy, gooey world champion.
Look, I mean, now that we are officially in the Cody Rhodes era, like, it's going to suck for me and for you. Like, we are not Cody Rhodes fans. I'm not a fan of the babyface character. There's going to be a lot of crying. Like, he cried in the press conference after. I mean, I wonder if now we can move on from my dad is Dusty Rhodes being the only kind of wrinkle to his character. I'm really curious if we can move on from that, because if we do move on from that, maybe there's a part of Cody Rhodes that could appeal to me. You know, like, maybe, like, they just needed to do this full circle garbage, which, again, admittedly, I'm in the minority for. And we can move on to a version of Cody Rhodes that's a lot more endearing for myself personally. I'm hoping it for that. And look, I got to give it to them. Like, last night, like, I hate Cody Rhodes, the character, but that match with Roman Reigns was awesome. Like, if you talk about just the wrestling match before all hell broke loose and everyone got involved, that was a really good wrestling match. Cody Rhodes is a really good in-ring competitor. And maybe we could talk about Roman Reigns a bit and what he means. And, you know, now that we could kind of be, now that we're in the post-mortem of his 3.5 year title reign. But before we get there, like, Cody Rhodes for me, like, hate the character, but I'm going to hold out hope because A, 90% of the crowd is fully behind him. And B, he is a damn good worker and he knows ring psychology. He's a solid promo. He has all the tools. It's just my personal preference and not my cup of tea. So, I mean, I'm holding out hope, but if it continues down this road, it's going to be tough for me. But I'm hoping that now that he has finally just once and for all finished his story, won the WWE Championship, that hopefully now we can move on to a different version and a different mission statement than Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, that's, you do wonder what his mission statement is, because if you remember 2 years ago after WrestleMania 38 beating Seth Rollins, he said his mission statement was exactly what happened last night. Okay, so he 2 years later, you know, long story arc. I appreciate the storytelling. There was again, well executed, very good in-ring performer. He's a good promo. You know, again, but it's just like, we don't like this version of him, but I have my concerns that, you know, while he may evolve, the argument against it would be, well, why are we going to change something that is working very well? So we could very much get a double down on what we are seeing now instead of an evolution into a more edgy Cody Rhodes, because he appeals to a lot of the younger audience, and you're not going to want to make him super edgy and change things up. If the formula is working right now and the fans are reacting the way they are, they couldn't be reacting much better. So it's not like they're sitting there going, crap, yeah, the fans, it's kind of half and half, we're getting a little bit of a polarizing response, let's evolve this. They may just look at it and go, we're getting as positive of a reaction as we could ask for. Why are we going to change things up? Well, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So, you know, until things start to change with the crowd reaction, I don't think you're going to see Cody Rhodes change. I think it's going to be more of the same.
And justifiably so, right?
Yeah. Oh, I get it. No, yeah. No. I'm not advocating that they change it. I wouldn't either. If I'm making bank with this dude, I'm going to say, guys, don't change anything. What are we doing? No. Don't move anything. Things are working well until the crowd starts to turn and you sense something's not right. I wouldn't either, but to our detriment and to our dismay, it's probably going to be more of the same and maybe even more so. But as far as Roman goes, yeah, I mean, we can turn the attention to him. How do you feel about his reign now that it's over? How do you, you know, kind of summarizing and putting a bow on his title reign here? How do you feel?
Look, I'm not going to play Monday morning quarterback and start maybe changing the way I would have done things or walking back comments that I've been talking about for almost a year and a half, but then really got reinvested with the Sammy stuff and kind of doubled back down starting, I would say since the whole Civil War stuff last year. Both you and I have been beating the drum to have this stuff come to an end. It was time. What I will say is that it is for sure one of those moments that you don't know what you have until it's gone. But I think my biggest critique of Roman Reigns' title run was when he went part-time. Before he was part-time and he was showing up every single week and every single pay-per-view and defending the championship like a typical champion, I didn't care that he had the title. You know, his first year and a half, 2 years, I think I would come on here and echo sentiments that most people had, that it was the best thing going on television and something that really saved wrestling during the pandemic era. Like, I think Drew McIntyre helped them tread water and Roman Reigns really helped them bring it out of the pandemic era. And one of the best stories we've seen in WWE in quite some time. He's an incredible worker. I think that the way he owns his character and blurs the lines between reality and fiction. Like, I don't know if you saw himself in the press conference post night one, but oh, yeah. Him and Paul Heyman were really like towing the line. Like, man, is this real or is it, you know, the creative side of things? And I think that if he was full-time, or not even full-time, just semi-full-time, like there every other week and at every single pay-per-view, I think I would have been ready for him to go another 6 months and beat Hulk Hogan's record. Because he is that good. And I'm not going to lie, I think that A&E documentary that was released a week ago or whenever it was, and as soon as they came out and released that, I knew that they were tipping their hand that his run was going to an end. And kind of, in my mind, like a wink and a nod to us to say, like, look, you've been asking for this, but this is the end. And this is maybe the reason why we put it on this long. But there were a lot of things I had issues with as far as his run went. You know, the Sami Zayn stuff I thought could have been a mistake. At the time, I thought it was 100% a mistake. But, you know, in retrospect, maybe they were thinking long term and maybe it was the right decision. I think that a lot of things were sacrificed at the altar of Roman Reigns. I don't think it was all great. But when he was there and when he was on television and when he had his matches, there was no denying that he was the bleeping best. And there is a reason why Vince saw talent in him, maybe in the wrong version of himself, but there was talent there. And there's a reason why Triple H pushed forward with him for a year and a half since he took over in July of 2022. So, I mean, I'm happy that the run is done because it was time and we need a consistent champion and we need the WWE Championship to be featured on weekly television. But I can't say that now that it's over and it finally happened that I'm not disappointed that this version of Roman Reigns and this chapter of the bloodline has been, you know, put to rest.
That is, and this is a case of we didn't know what we had until it's gone. And we say we want something and then we get it and then we're like, oh, but I kind of miss it. Now, again, I, just like you, am not walking back a single thing I said about Roman with his run and that it should have come to an end a while ago. I still believe it should have been at the Chamber last February. I still believe that. Even though we got all the storytelling and all that this year, I still think it should have been Sammy at that point. But here we are, and obviously that didn't happen. And I think Roman's run will be looked at as, for many of us, the longest championship run in our lifetimes. This really may be. I can't see Cody. Babyfaces don't hang on to belts that long. They shouldn't, because it's the thrill of the chase for the babyfaces. You also run the risk of babyfaces getting turned on by the crowd because they get bored and a little bit kind of complacent with the champion. They're ready for a change, just like with Seth Rollins as world champion. We can maybe talk about that in the second half of the show. But with babyfaces, you're not going to see a champion that long for 3.5 years plus running with a championship. It just doesn't make sense. So this really could be in our lifetimes. Through, like, we will die, likely not with a champion longer than Roman Reigns, which is kind of crazy to think about. And you know what? Roman Reigns deserves all the credit in the world. I'm very interested to see how Roman's second chapter post the title run, like what that entails. I'm curious what Paul Levesque has in store for Roman. Sure, it probably is Rock Roman, no title, as it should have been this year, but at 41, it probably is. But what about, you know, some other things that he's got going on? Maybe he turns Roman Reigns babyface, or maybe he waits till next year. That would be a fun kind of side of Roman we haven't seen in how many years, 5 years. So I think that this, there's a lot that Roman could do. He's going to take time off, which is going to be, I think, much needed. And when he comes back, the fans will embrace him. And as far as, you know, Cody Rhodes winning, one last thing I'll say about the Cody Rhodes victory is, from a storyline perspective, you know, my question is to you, though, like, what do you think, when do you think WWE planned to take the belt off him? Because the fans are the ones that made this happen with Cody at Mania. Otherwise, he would have been facing Seth Rollins for the world title on the other side of the show. So, like, if the fans didn't force The Rock to step aside and put Cody here, when did you think they planned on having Cody beat Roman Reigns? I mean, like, if this didn't, the fans literally changed the whole thing and forced this to happen. So the original booking, I wonder when they planned on giving the belt to Cody.
Well, The Rock in his, did you watch his press conference after night one by any chance?
I saw some of The Rock, yeah.
It was very interesting because I think he was the only one, aside from Triple H, obviously, that really completely pulled back the curtain. And you can make an argument on either side of the fence for that. Is it good? Is it bad? Whatever. But The Rock basically said that after, I believe they were in Alabama, when he came out, Cody gave him his spot, and then all hell broke loose online. And we had the Cody crybabies, and we want Cody, this and that. And he said the following week he was in Hawaii, where I think he mentioned he spends a lot of his time, and he woke up and something clicked in his brain and he knew exactly how the pivot was supposed to be. And I imagine it was there. I imagine that when they went into that press event in Las Vegas, which I believe was a week after all hell broke loose on SmackDown in late January, I think that they already knew. I think that the moment The Rock was referring to is probably when he called Triple H, or they called each other, or someone came up with it, that they had to go this road and give the people what they wanted. Because they had been telling the Cody Rhodes story for 2 years, and this is what the fans wanted to see. And he mentioned that there were some people who were still pushing for, you know, we just got to move forward with Rock and Roman and do whatever we have to do for it. I wonder if that person was, you know, Vince McMahon behind the curtains. I'm trying to remember the timeline as to when Vince McMahon was ousted from WWE and when this happened. I guess Vince was already gone because that happened before the Rumble. But I mean, it's crazy to think that there were some people who thought it would be a good idea to just push forward with Rock and Roman Reigns, and how you could have risked this Mania going down as one of the worst ever. But I mean, I would imagine that somewhere right before that press event in Las Vegas, I feel like once they did that press event in Las Vegas, the main reason they did that was to really kind of tip their hand that this was the direction they were going.
Yeah, I mean, I give WWE credit, though, because if Vince McMahon was still in charge, I think they would have just forged ahead. And Vince would have had a war of attrition, as he has had many times with the fans, and said, screw it, I know better than them. We're going to push forward and we're going to make them like this. You know, I could see Vince doing that. He hasn't always done that, but in big, big spots, there have been times where, especially, I mean, look at Roman Reigns' babyface run for 6 years as the big dog. I mean, look no further than that. It was a war of attrition for 6 years with the fans, and ultimately the fans ended up being right on that one. But I do wonder if it wasn't Paul Levesque there, would they have pivoted so quickly? Would they have pivoted so abruptly, but also done it so seamlessly and done it in a way that made total sense? I mean, again, Vince, you know, it's impossible to know, but Vince at times, especially towards the end, did things that didn't make a whole lot of sense, would just hotshot things and not really think things through. And long-term booking was a foreign concept to him at that time. So, yeah, I mean, I give Paul Levesque credit. I give The Rock. I give Cody. I give Roman. Everybody. Paul Heyman, who I think probably had a very intricate role in this whole thing, you know, was involved. And look, it ultimately turned out, while we're not done with everything and we'll hear about finishing stories, it's really not finishing the story. It's just going to the next chapter. Up to this point, I give everyone credit. It was executed perfectly. Everything, really, if you're a Cody fan, could not have gone off better from start to finish. A two-year story is really unheard of in WWE to be that successful for that long, being told all the way through. It really was a testament to how good wrestling can be when it's done well and it's done right. And to Michael Cole's statement last night that I think will live in WrestleMania lore, he said, damn it, I love professional wrestling. I mean, there's no quicker way to get yourself fired if Vince was still there. But it's really, I appreciate Michael Cole saying that, because I think he echoes the sentiments of fans around the world. When pro wrestling is done right, there really isn't a whole lot, not a whole lot of forms of entertainment that are better. So I give Michael Cole had a hell of a night. I really appreciate the hell out of him, too, despite his tears of weeping joy for Cody Rhodes at the end. And you know, it is what it is there. But I really thought Michael Cole had a very good night on commentary, as well as, you know, CM Punk did, too. I really like this stuff.
It's just, you know, top to bottom, even if there are things that you disagree with, like we do in some way with the Cody Rhodes stuff, you still have an appreciation for everything the company did. And there was a conceited effort to move away from everything Vince McMahon stood for. Like, even Stephanie McMahon coming out to start the show, which, to be honest, I never thought I would, like, low-key pop for Stephanie McMahon, but I did low-key pop for Stephanie McMahon. And Triple H alluding to the fact that she's home. I wonder if she's going to play some kind of a role in WWE moving forward. But it just kind of felt like this was the first time. And I don't know if you saw Vince McMahon's trainer post a message on Instagram about, like, people turning his back on Vince. But it's just like, you know what? People have probably been waiting for this moment for over a decade. And as we know, behind the scenes, Vince McMahon, you know, very underselling this point, but probably wasn't the best dude personally. And it kind of goes back to that comment from the Dark Knight of when Two-Face says it. Harvey, what's his last name? Harvey Dent. You either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And I think that comment perfectly describes Vince McMahon, that the first WrestleMania that he is completely not involved in, it is an amazing WrestleMania. And even if there are creative decisions that you and I or whoever dislike, when you step back and look at it objectively, you still say, I didn't like it. It wasn't my cup of tea. But it was still a damn good WrestleMania. It was still a damn good decision, and I understand it. Everything made sense. Like, in the moment, I was just like, why the hell did Seth Rollins come out in his Shield gear? That was dumb. But then I take a step back and say, okay, it makes sense. Why the hell is The Undertaker there? You know, assuming that Steve Austin didn't have the runs, let's say, and they just decided to be Undertaker. Step back and say, I hate it, but I understand why he was there, because of Roman Reigns, as he defeated him, and because Brock Lesnar defeated him, and Paul Heyman's involvement with Brock Lesnar. I get it. So that's the difference here. And it's just so crazy to see the difference of the storytelling, the difference of the product, the difference of the verbiage, how good Michael Cole is all of a sudden, that I found during the Vince McMahon time really was nauseating at points. Like the big dog, or it's boss time. Like now you're starting to really see, like, man, Vince had his fingers in every single pie. And I remember when you and I started doing this show 5 years ago, which is crazy to think, by the way, that we would say sometimes, like, you know, is Vince's, like, involvement too overblown, or is Vince being so bad at his job overblown? Honestly speaking, I think it was undersold, because the difference just in the last 3 months when Vince was officially removed is palpable.
And, you know, Triple H keeps alluding to more changes coming, and that right now they're only slowly rolling out much, much bigger changes, whatever those are. And that strategically makes sense as a company. You don't want to just 180 everything. It's not a good way to implement change. You need to have people buy into why you're changing, to kind of work out the kinks while you go step by step. Makes total sense from a business perspective. So when we look back at the product year over year, you'll see larger changes, but they were implemented slowly, and that's a very smart way to do it. So we'll see what those changes are going forward. But, you know, you alluded to the fact that there's a lot of things that we didn't like about the Cody Rhodes story, or this story or that story, whatever it may be. But we also, at the same time, while we hate it, I think, and it's not blowing smoke up either of our asses, it's just across the board. If anybody can relate to this, it's a sign, I think, of maturity and intelligence that you can say you hate something, but not also at the same time be like, well, it doesn't make any sense and I don't understand it. No, you understand it, and you may or may not respect it. But if you don't show that you understand why something happened, but at the same time can say you hate it, then it's all about, it's a very kind of, I think, immature take. But that said, there's a lot of that happened last night with Cody, and it's fine. I think they did a great job of execution. And I just think to myself, like, imagine sitting with Vince McMahon last night while he's watching, because you know damn well he's watching WrestleMania from wherever he is. Imagine sitting there with Vince as they say the words professional wrestling, and they, you know, they do all these things that he just, like, forebode. Like, I mean, he just said, absolutely not. It's sports entertainment now. The things that he never did or banned have now come back out. And just to be able to sit with Vince McMahon, it would be an amazing experience last night. And as far as the first McMahonless WrestleMania, well, yeah, that got killed in the first, like, 5 minutes of night two. I know it's Stephanie McMahon, you know, Levesque, I get it. But, like, we think we're not going to have a McMahon. Finally, at a WrestleMania, we get Stephanie coming out. And I know she doesn't have a role, and, you know, she may not have any hand in creative, but it's just funny. Like, we all think, okay, finally, well, what's a McMahonless WrestleMania going to look like? And the first things first, here, Stephanie McMahon comes out. But it was cool to see her. And she's, you know, it's such an underrated character on TV. She is very good in her delivery. She's, I think, one of the best heels the company's ever had. She is, she in the ring, when she did compete, she was more than adequate to very good at times. Not incredible, but she did her part. And it was cool to see her. And I don't know what her role is going to be moving forward. I have no clue. But if she wants to have a backstage role of sorts, and you know, I think that she'd be more than adequate for that. So because I do want to pivot to the world title situation, but any wrap up thoughts on Cody, Roman, or where do you think they're really going, and maybe how long Cody's going to hold the belt? Because I think it's going to be at least a year. I mean, I don't think we're going to have a Cody Rhodes, you know, just title defense that we're going, oh boy, he could finally lose it here, until WrestleMania 41 at least. But what are your thoughts on that?
You know what? I'm not too sure about that, to be honest with you, because you can't have every world champion hold the title for like a year plus or 10 months plus. And I mean, either way, I think that the first time he's seriously going to be in jeopardy is probably SummerSlam. And you're probably right that he will hold it at least till next year's WrestleMania. But I don't think that this, I think what Triple H did early on with the long title runs, whether that be Intercontinental or WWE or World Heavyweight, I think it was just kind of like an overcorrection. And not even an overcorrection, because I think that they were good moves with the Intercontinental and all that. But I don't think that that's going to just be the norm automatically. I think he had to set that tone after years of Vince just like changing titles around like it was hot potato. But I don't think it's an absolute certainty that like Cody's going to hold it until next year's Mania. But that's a good thing, right? You know, yeah. I thought that this year's WrestleMania was predictable in a lot of ways, but in a good way, but also on some unpredictability, which is kind of like a wink and a nod to the World Heavyweight title picture, is a good thing sometimes.
Well, speaking of the world title picture, I got to ask, I mean, in our final 15 minutes or so here, like what did you make of Drew finally getting his moment? It took four Claymores to beat Seth Rollins. You know, obviously kick out to finishes all over the place, which is kind of par for the course last night. But what did you make of Drew getting his moment? He gets 5 minutes as champion. He gets it in front of fans. It is a big moment for him as a person, not even a character. And then we get the cash in. How do you feel about the cash in? How do you feel about the match, which was only 10 minutes, by the way, which I felt very kind of shorted by. But what did you make?
I love the match. I love that they opened the show. I thought that Drew winning clean was the way to go. I thought him explaining the fact that Seth wrestled the night before was awesome. Him opening the match with a Claymore, I thought was great. I think there was a bit too many finisher kickouts, but I mean, that's kind of become the norm in WWE, especially at WrestleMania. So, I mean, it is what it is. I loved the embrace of Seth Rollins after, and I think I mentioned that on our preview and prediction show that I thought that there would be a moment like that between the two. And I believe Seth was like crying and said, "You bleeping deserve it, man." Mm-hmm. And it was nice. It was cool. Like, even my girlfriend was just like, "Wow, this is a really good moment." She started tearing up, and I was just like, "Okay, relax a bit." And then it was a really nice moment because it was 4 years in the making. And to your point, remove Drew McIntyre, the character. I believe his real name is Drew Galloway, if I'm not mistaken. Just for the guy, like, that's awesome. And it was so hilarious because you saw how much it meant to him. I think the fans were eating it up. I think the fans wanted him to win. And I looked at my buddy and I said, could you imagine they do him dirty with a cash-in? And then they do it. And I didn't think it was the right decision. I'm still not sure if it was. I cannot believe they pulled the trigger on that. But at the end of the day, I think Damian Priest is ready to be that guy. I think it was an epic moment. And I forget who said it, but like, I don't know if I read it, so forgive me if it was a big name pundit, but it was essentially on the lines of, instead of trying to recreate a moment from 4 years ago that was lost for Drew McIntyre, he was able to contribute to a brand new, unique moment that will stand the test of time. And that is kind of true. Like, yeah, it sucks what happened 4 years ago, and yeah, maybe it would have been good to just give him his moment at Mania, and I guess they half did. But I mean, what they were able to do with Damian Priest, get CM Punk involved in some capacity, the shot of CM Punk in the pipe bomb pose on the announce table in the background, clapping and laughing at Drew McIntyre after he got pinned, is iconic to me. You once again lay more groundwork for an eventual CM Punk-Drew McIntyre match. And we know that Clash of the Castle's coming down the pike in Scotland. And maybe this sets the tone for Drew McIntyre to potentially finally have his moment there against Damian Priest. So, like, I felt for Drew McIntyre as the character and as the person, but from a current day storytelling perspective, it kind of made a lot of sense.
Yeah, it did. I mean, there is the school of thought, well, damn it, Drew, you know, he deserved that moment and not get it, have it cut short. Which I agree with, but he also did get his moment. I mean, it was 5 minutes or so that he was champion, and it is frustrating if you are Drew Galloway that, you know, man, they just can't let me go. They always have to do something stupid. There always has to be a pandemic. You know, it's always the universe conspiring against me, but he did have his moment, albeit short. And then he gets into this program with Punk that, I mean, he's running his mouth. I did not expect Punk to get involved physically in any way. When he tore off his arm brace, I'm like, wait, what? Are we having like a John Cena return at the Royal Rumble moment here? Like, what the hell's going on? And he did attack Drew. Didn't take any bumps, so that was good. No, you know, no risking further injury. I really also loved, I don't know if anyone else heard it on the camera mic, when Drew was giving Seth the Future Shock DDT on the outside, he looked at Punk and said, "You remember this move? Like the one that injured him." Like, I mean, like he, right in front of his face. And I'm like, this is the stuff that I love. And Drew tweeting Wow. Yeah. I even see that too. Like, I'm sure you did. That Drew's tweeting while he's actually in the match saying bored at work, LOL. And because he's so bored with Seth Rollins, it's too easy. And it's just like stuff like that that's never been done. I love Drew's character. I still believe we need a proper heel run for him, but we got another heel run, and that is Damian Priest, who has finally cashed in. We can get rid of the briefcase. We don't have to call him Send Your Money in the Bank anymore. We don't have to worry about the briefcase, at least for another 3 months until someone else gets one. But Damian Priest winning was, to me, was it the right time? I mean, it did further Drew and Punk's program to a nuclear level. The only concern I have, and I brought this up on my review show earlier today, is like, well, okay, yes, it absolutely furthered their program, but also Punk can't wrestle for another few months. So that you lit this thing on fire, poured gasoline on it, but now it's got to cool off because Punk, outside of doing promos and things, is not going to be, I wouldn't think, taking bumps and brawling with Drew. He's not ready to get back in the ring. So you lit something on fire that really can't be followed through with for at least another 2 to 3 months. But Drew could absolutely get involved, and maybe there's a triple threat with Seth, Drew, and Damian at Backlash. But I don't know how they let the thing on fire and then go, all right, well, we'll get back to this in a few months.
Yeah, it's I thought that maybe this could have been done even tonight, like Raw after Mania. I didn't think that Drew was going to get a long title run. I thought maybe, you know, Damian was going to do it between now and, I think I said, Extreme Rules sometime in May. I understand the whole Mania pop of it. And I certainly don't think it was a bad decision. I think it was, it set something up. I didn't know if it had to be done last night. Like you said, like, yes, you lay more groundwork for this impending clash between Drew McIntyre and CM Punk. But at the same time, like you said, you're still months away from that. So, I mean, it's building anticipation. I thought, like, again, personally, I think that you could have shelved this for Raw tonight or sometime within the next month and a half. But I certainly do get the appeal of doing it last night, and it certainly set the tone for the night moving forward.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, it did. And I think it really did a nice job, too, of bringing down a lot of our guards, forgetting that Damian Priest. Well, some of us were thinking about it, but even if you were thinking about the Damian Priest cash-in, the scenario didn't lend itself to you thinking Damian was going to come out because Drew had won. There was the exchange between Seth and Drew. You're thinking, okay, nice moment for Drew. He finally gets it. You know, Drew's standing tall. And you're thinking, okay, yeah, they're not going to do the cash in. And then he's mouthing off to Punk, and you're like, well, Punk's injured. He's not going to brawl with Drew right now. And then he trips Drew, and then we're off to the races, and bam. I mean, you heard the pop. I think they did a nice job of at least even the more experienced fans thinking that, nah, they won't do the cash in right now, even if you are thinking of the cash in. So it was very creatively well done, as well as it could have been done. And now he's world champion. I don't know how long Damian Priest is going to be world champion. He feels he's not a transitional champion, but to me, I don't think he'll be a long reigning world champion. And especially given that apparently the draft is going to be coming in a month. Now, I heard that, I forget which outlet I heard that through, but apparently Triple H has said that the draft is coming in a month or so, and they're not going to be waiting till fall. So if the shakeup happens sooner than later, I mean, we keep pointing to LA Knight, but I think he's a perfect candidate. Your point, I mean, people talk about Gunther. He could absolutely be in the world title contention. We'll see if that happens right away or if he still lingers in the IC title world for a while getting his rematches. But, you know, if the shakeup happens, I mean, there's a ton of new opponents that we could have Damian Priest working with, even if Seth goes probably along with Becky and takes some time off.
Yeah, no, I think so. And like we mentioned last week, I really think that WWE is in a position here where they can afford to do that. They don't need Seth right now. Like, you look at just the current landscape with the assumption that, let's say, Cody's going to SmackDown, but let's keep everything else equal for the time being, just for the sake of argument. On SmackDown, you have Cody there with Randy Orton, you have Kevin Owens, you have AJ Styles, you have LA Knight, like, right, Bobby Lashley. Like, right there, you have a bunch of guys that could at least flex into the world championship picture. On Monday Night Raw, along with Damian Priest, you have Drew McIntyre. You have Gunther now, who is without a championship. Obviously, you're probably missing a top babyface on Monday Night Raw. But Sami Zayn, Intercontinental Champion, but he's going to be kicking around. You, Chad Gable, if you want to flex into that picture as well. Like, you, I believe I'm missing someone on Monday Night Raw. Jey Uso, there you go. So, I mean, they don't need a world they don't need Seth Rollins there for the time being. Will it be a benefit to have him? Of course. But they could afford to go a couple of months, 4 or 5 months until SummerSlam season without him there. So for me, I think that it would be good for everyone involved for Seth Rollins to take a bit of a step back.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely, I think, reasonable to assume. And Seth needs time off just like Becky does. It's weird that Becky and Seth's careers have really paralleled each other the last few months in a lot of ways, where the fans have been behind them, but not to the degree that they were at one point. And both of them, both of their characters, and I think really both of their bodies and minds, just on a real level, feel like they need time. And if Seth needs to get his back repaired, or his knee is actually needs repairing from a surgical perspective, dude, now's the time to go. Go and get that stuff done now. Maybe you can get back in time for SummerSlam or, you know, towards the fall. Get it done now so you're ready for WrestleMania season next year. And on top of that, the fans will learn to miss you. I mean, time, you know, distance and time can be a very big factor and really kind of a cure for fans who may have otherwise been kind of, may have turned against you. So I think both Becky and Seth need to take time, step away. That may not happen, but that's my suggestion. That's kind of my feel as a fan. Now, as we kind of wrap things up here, I know there's a lot of other matches and things that happen, and we don't have time to go through them all, but I'll let the stage be yours for any other comments or your reactions to any other matches or really segments or moments that happened over the last 2 days.
I really love the tag team ladder match. That was awesome. I think the swerve of splitting the titles again, whether you agree with splitting the titles or not, I thought the swerve of having like a two falls match was awesome. It really was something similar to like that triple threat match at WrestleMania 2000 for the IC and European championships. So that's the one thing that comes to my brain, is that I just absolutely love that match. And some of the bumps that went on, the JD McDonagh bump, the Grayson Waller bump, the white noise off the top of the ladder, absolutely insane. That was one of the matches that really just stuck out to me.
No, I'm with you. And that match actually scared me. I went in scared, and I think we talked about it, but it even scared me more when I saw that ladder buckling that wasn't supposed to buckle. And the guys are competing on it, and they're multiple men on the ladder, and the ladder is hanging on by a thread. Like, one of the legs was snapped, and it was like, oh my God, if this thing goes, like, somebody could easily get hurt really badly. And they finally replaced the ladder. R-Truth's like, hey guys, here, take this one, because it was concerning. But yeah, that was a car crash match, but you knew it was going to be really good. Just a lot of action and bodies being flown everywhere, and bumps that I'm sure the guys are going to feel for weeks. Nothing but respect for everyone in that match. And the feel for R-Truth, that's a feel good moment if you're ever looking for one. To me, like that, as a 52 year old guy, to be able to still perform at that level and get that reaction from a crowd was, for me, more emotional than the Cody victory. I mean, really, it was for me, because I don't like the Cody character. But R-Truth, at that age, having that kind of connection with the crowd was a very awesome moment for him. And I don't expect a long reign for Truth and Miz, probably a few months, and that's fine. But he had his moment, finally winning at WrestleMania, because he's been winless, completely winless at WrestleMania. So that was fun for me. I mean, and on top of it, I think another match that I wanted to comment on that I'm curious on your thoughts with is Bayley and Io Sky. For me, that outperformed my expectations. And I tweeted this out saying, hey, where the hell has this version of Io been the last 6 months when she's been hidden and irrelevant in damage control? You know, like, if we got this version of Io the whole time, I would be like, well, I don't know if Bayley needs it yet. But she saved the best performance of her career for WrestleMania. And I'm just thinking, where has this been her entire career? I mean, she's shown it, but it's been so long. So I didn't know your thoughts on the Bayley victory.
I mean, again, predictable, but the right decision. You know, this was a top candidate match to outperform its build. It was awesome. You know, it really, really was great. I think that this was one of those programs that was hurt by the, how would you say, the I'm losing my train of thought here, the bloodline eating up so much time on SmackDown. I think you could say that to a lot of the SmackDown programs, whether it was the Pride versus the Final Testament, which was, I think, undisputedly the worst match on the card.
Jimmy, we'll give you a run for your money.
That was pretty bad. That was pretty quickly on that. Like, what did you think of that? Because you weren't high going in on that to start.
I'll be honest with you, and I have had time to digest it, and it still was really bad. It's disappointing to say that. I don't enjoy saying that because both of them are amazing in ring wrestlers, and you would just you're kind of very befuddled by the fact that they're brothers. They were born together. They've worked together forever as a tag team, which I think is the reason why they didn't have a whole lot of chemistry. And you're looking at this going, are these rookies? I mean, they're just doing super kick after super kick. Somebody counted for me. I think it was just under 20 total super kicks. And then not on top of the fact that they used more super kicks, they weren't even selling the super kicks. It was just like they weren't even hitting each other. It was just like, let me slap my knee and pretend to hit you in the face. Like, it was a parody of a match is what it was. And I hate to say that. It was horrific. And I think that I hate to say it. I just hope they move on. Like, can we finally move on? Let's just pretend it didn't happen. Easily the worst match of WrestleMania. And it's crazy to say, given where Jay has come from and where he's been elevated over the last year. For Jimmy, I mean, it didn't help his career either. But to me, it was horrific.
Yeah. So the Bayley and EO stuff, I mean, I thought it was exactly the way it should have played out. I thought the build, the video package, which the badass video packages are back now. They are absolutely killing it with these things. And for me, I just think that it did exactly what it needed to do, in my opinion. I just really believe that it was exactly right up. It was exactly what the doctor ordered. That's the best way that I could put it. And in my opinion, I think it's a good showcase for Io Sky that not a lot of people were high on for obvious reasons, but I really do believe that this is a moment that we could take away from and be like, man, okay, this is the Io Sky that we have to look forward to. And for Bayley, I mean, she comes out with a new theme song. I had no idea that she was Egyptian, but that was cool. I mean, I thought that was a cool entrance, but I mean, I was kind of waiting for them to bring back the Bayley Buddies theme, yeah. But I guess it wouldn't have made sense for this this evolved version of Bayley. But it was cool to see a different dynamic to her, you know, paying, you know, I guess, homage to her heritage and with the new theme song, a lot of new theme songs at this WrestleMania, which was cool to see. But all in all, just a pretty cool moment across the board.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, tonight I'm very interested to see what they do. It can't be much worse than the last couple of Monday Night Raws after WrestleMania, which it still left me underwhelmed as an understatement. So tonight I think they have a big chance to deliver some more. You know, we know what the open of the show is going to be. We don't even need to discuss it. We know what it's going to be. So, but I'm sure we'll also kind of see and look into focus as to who's Cody's first opponent's going to be, which will be interesting as we get into Backlash, which is coming, I think, the first week of May in France. So that'll be interesting to see where they go after that. And if there are any other big surprises or big returns, I mean, you don't want to, as much as we saw last night, you don't want to blow everything on one night. I mean, they have to have aces in the back of their pocket, as Vince McMahon has always infamously said. You always have to have an ace up your sleeve. And maybe they have a one or two more for tonight's show. And so very interested to see how the first Paul Levesque era Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania looks compared to the last couple of ones with Vince. So any wrap-up thoughts?
I'm looking forward to it. Look, there's certain things that I didn't like. There were certain things that I certainly nitpicked. But all in all, I was a huge fan of this WrestleMania. And just because I hate The Undertaker, and just because I hate the random kids who I had no idea how they were, maybe they just jumped the guardrail, who knows? It still doesn't change the fact that this was principally and mainly an awesome WrestleMania. But I will say, if I was in attendance, I would have attacked The Undertaker. That's me. I don't care.
Just, yeah. No, I did not know your disdain for The Undertaker has run so deep. This is an interesting.
When that gong went off, like my buddy, who was the biggest Austin fan, screamed at the top of his lungs, "Bleep no, why the bleep is this bleeping guy out here?
That's how, I mean, it's crazy, but I hate saying that. I'm an Undertaker fan, not a crazy fan, but I respect and I do like his character generally. And I think that it's the first time I heard his gong go off where I actually was just filled with dread. I just go, no, like, come on. I just, because you knew what that meant. It meant he's replacing Stone Cold Steve Austin. That was a big womp womp for me, even though it's Taker. So I wish I could have seen that, your friend flip out, because I think it's how a lot of us felt. If you're an Austin fan and we all expected it to happen, you're just like, bro, where are you? I mean, are you at home? Are you, you're slamming some Steve Weisers? What's happening? So yeah, maybe he was on the pot, you know, and like you said, it just may have been creatively bad if for some reason he felt it was. So eventually we'll find out why, or maybe he'll show up in the near future. I don't think Austin's done.
It was actually funny. I saw some, I don't know if this was true, but apparently Steve Austin posted a picture playing with his cat while the main event was going on.
He did.
If that, I don't know if it's true, but if that's hilarious, that is the biggest troll job. My buddy, who doesn't have social media, forced me, and he was a few beverages down the hatch, so maybe this kind of fueled this decision. He forced me to DM Steve Austin and ask what happened.
You actually DM'd him?
I did. I fully expected him to give me the Heisman and be like, who's this loser? Yeah. But I mean, it was funny in the moment. Dude, my buddy, like, I was upset, but my buddy was so, like, when Cody Rhodes was congratulating himself and lifted up like he just won the homecoming game in college, my buddy was literally like, he was lying to himself. He was saying like, you know, what's going to happen is he's going to go up the ramp with the belt and the Rock's going to attack him on the ramp. And then Austin, I'm just like, dude, it's over. Like, it's done.
I held on to the same belief, but once I saw everyone coming in and I saw like kids and wives coming in, I go, no, it's not happening. But I saw the Rock turn back and look at Cody. And if he had attacked Cody after that, I would have been like, okay, yeah, this, okay, here we go. But with no attack, I'm just like, ah, damn it. It's over. So I feel the pain, and Austin, we deserve an explanation. Like, we need to know what the hell happened, because it wasn't about Stone Cold, but at the same time, it kind of was, looking forward to him stunning the Rock. Come on. So,
and like, yeah. The history, there was no like, I get it with Roman and Heyman, I understand, but the Rock and Taker, like, never really had, like, they, no, for sure had matches, but they never really had a rivalry.
No, they didn't. That's the thing. I'm like, it's not they didn't have a long-standing rivalry like that I can even really think of. They cross paths, but there's nothing. I'm like, oh man, remember that Rock Taker match? I mean, like, it doesn't really exist. So yeah, it's not like they had a massive history. It's just one massive legend attacks another in the main event of WrestleMania. It's newsworthy, but it's like, it doesn't really fit. It doesn't fit to me when you had the biggest star of all time that would have actually made sense to interfere. And it would have been a roof-blowing moment. Not that there was one, but all right. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there. You know, we've got a lot to look forward to tonight. And I don't think, moving forward, I think that there's going to be a lot more to talk about as we see what Triple H has in store for us. That is apparently, according to him, going to blow our minds. So
I'm really looking forward to it, man. And I think we're in a really fun era here to be a wrestling fan.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's going to get better. I think it's going to get better as we move into WrestleMania 41, which we can already start talking about. So, all right. Well, you go rest up and we'll chat in a week.
Looking forward to it, man. Take care.
You too.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.